Episode 300 of The Pilot. The Pilot Podcast takes off now.
Fly with Garmin Avionics, then grab your mobile device and make the Garmin Pilot app your cockpit companion. Get advanced functions you'll use before, during, and after every flight, including updating your aircraft's databases and logging engine data. Plan, file, fly, log with Garmin Pilot.
The Pilot to Pilot Podcast is brought to you by Learn the Finer Points. Use the link below to save 10% off their ground school app. With high-resolution coast-to-coast composite radar and cloud-to-cloud, cloud-to-ground lighting updated every 2.5 minutes along with always available weather products like METARs, Echotops, and StormTracks, SiriusXM lets you fly confidently knowing that your weather information is available at 500 feet or at your destination 500 miles ahead.
Hello, my name is Lewis. I'm the owner and operator of a YouTube channel, Ludix Aviation. I'm a CFI, CFII, former airline pilot, an aviation YouTuber trying to spread the good word of aviation on my YouTube channel.
Aviation, what is going on? And welcome back to the Pilot to Pilot Podcast. My name is Justin Seams and I am your host. Today's episode is a big one. One, because we have Lewis from Ludix Aviation on. And two, if you see the new logo, if you see the videos, if you see YouTube, you're going to notice that we have essentially a main sponsor. Now, RAA, you've heard on the podcast a million times, we are taking a further step together, and they are the official main sponsor of the Pilot Podcast. So anywhere you see my logo, you will also see RAA and Allworth Airline Advisors. So we're really excited about this. I love working with RAA. You can always find out the best financial tips from them, and you can go to raa.com/pilot to find more info there. But stay tuned for Instagram, podcast, YouTube. We're going to be doing some cool things here coming up. So I'm excited to have them on board and we're going to partner together even more. But Aviation, today is not just about RAA and Pilot to Pilot. Today is about Ludix Aviation. And I've seen his videos before, even though in this podcast, I admit that I don't really watch much aviation YouTube, but you always have seen Lewis. You have seen him on Instagram. You've seen him on Reels. You've seen him on YouTube. He is a funny dude and I can confirm he's funny in real life as well, unless it was all show. But it was a lot of fun talking to him. He's as real on this podcast as I think just about anyone has gotten. So whether he gets canceled for his words or if you enjoy it, we'll want to look forward to it. But Lewis, thanks for coming on, man. I really appreciate it. And if you haven't found Ludix's Aviation, make sure you go to Ludix Aviation and you check out his YouTube, Instagram, streaming. But Aviation, I don't want to keep you much longer. So any further ado, here's Lewis from Ludix Aviation. Lewis, what's going on, man? Welcome to the Pilot Podcast.
Thank you for having me on, brother. I appreciate it. It's good to finally be able to do it, man.
Right? It was probably like 5 years ago. No, I'm just kidding.
I know. Seriously. Yeah. I keep rejecting your advances.
Right? Hey, man, I am very persistent. All right. So I'm just sitting there waiting my chance. You know, I don't want to do too many requests. You know, I'm always there. So if anyone's.
Exactly. No. It's good. It's funny. I was on stream the other day on my Twitch and somebody kind of mentioned like, oh, you'd be great to go on the Pilot to Pilot podcast. I was like, man, you know, we talked about it a while ago and I just didn't have the time and we just never got to it, but we're here. So that's what matters.
Here we are.
So we don't give up.
We do not give up. Never.
Never go. Never what?
I love it. Oh man. All right. Well, let's get started. Tell me about yourself. Tell me why aviation. What was it about aviation that made you want to get involved?
Yeah, man. So it was actually with my granddad that kind of grew the love for aviation. He's the only one in the family that was ever kind of involved directly with aviation. He was in the Royal Air Force in England. And when I was a kid, I just remember growing the love for airplanes, airports. He used to take me to different aviation museums and around different airports around the UK just to watch the planes and, you know, buy model aircraft and stuff. And that's what grew it. We used to go on a flight simulator whenever I went to his house and just sit on there for hours on end, just like playing around, just flying around. And it's funny, the one thing that I've always taken from him, and it's something so small, like whenever I would jerk the aircraft around on flight simulator as a kid, he'd be like, no, kind of calm down. You've got passengers in the back. You don't want them spilling the coffee. Easy. And that stayed with me all through my career. So pretty cool, man. That's what grew it though, man. It's good.
So when you were playing flight simulator with your grandpa, did you think that it was going to be, a future career for you? Like now you're essentially playing flight simulator on.
I know. oh man, I never once thought that it was going to turn out to be like that. But I mean, when I look back on it, there's been never anything else that I've wanted to do. You know, nothing stood out to me as much as flying. You know, there was other things, you know, I used to enjoy drama in school, you know, like acting and stuff, but it was always the aviation that kind of stuck in my mind. Anytime I looked up to the sky, and it sounds so cliche, but looking at planes, just like mouth open, like wondering where they're going, you know, like it's always been that. So, but no, never imagined that I'd be doing it for a career and now playing on Flight Simulator on stream. Full circle, man.
Full circle. It always comes full circle. That's awesome. Yeah. So where were you born originally?
Born in a little town called Bolton in England. Okay. It's near Manchester in the northwest.
So you're a City fan?
That question always comes up. My team is actually a team called Bolton Wanderers. We are now in the third division of English football, but it's fine. Yeah. We don't need to talk
moving
about
up.
That too much.
We're moving
exactly. We had financial troubles, but now hopefully getting better. So,
well, hey man, you keep building your brand, you know, invest a little bit in Bolton, you know, you can be the Lubick Stadium, you know.
Exactly. Come on, yeah. They've not contacted me yet for a sponsorship, so I'm waiting, but we'll see.
I know people. I'll get it.
Yeah, there you go. The reach of this podcast is going to help me out.
Oh, it's huge, man. It's a huge over in UK with the EPL teams. And
there you go.
The third league.
Right, yeah. Thank God. See, I knew there was a reason for this. I knew it.
All right. So how did you come over to the States? So when did that all happen?
So the family and I, well, I mean, I was young at the time. So, I mean, my parents bought a holiday home over here that we just enjoyed coming to Florida so much. I live in Orlando. And we just kept coming over so much, bought a holiday home, rented it out to people when we weren't using it, but we ended up coming like 3 times a year. We just loved it so much. We wanted to make it permanent. So we did. I had done no flying prior to moving here, apart from one flight in the back seat of an aircraft with my granddad was on like a Discovery flight in the UK. As a birthday present. I was in the back of that, and but until coming here, I hadn't flown. So all my training and stuff has been in the United States, and all the work that I've done has been in the United States. So but yeah, we just came over. That was in end of 2004. And yeah, now we're here.
Yeah. I was about to say, do you think your life and your kind of career right now be completely different if you never made the move over to the United States?
100%. I don't think, I mean, prices of stuff now and cost of training now has gone up from what it was, but even so, back in the UK, it's rather expensive from what I understand. And also the other side of it as well is the weather. You know, it's tough to train over there. I get a ton of messages now from people in the UK wanting to come over and do conversions and stuff and do time building over here because they just can't do it over there because the weather's so bad. So, dude, but yeah,
I lived in Columbus, Ohio, so not really the UK, but the weather is absolute trash.
Right.
I've never been there before, but wintertime, falls are great in Ohio, but that's about it. So, wintertime was rough, so I imagine that's just 24/7 over there in the
UK. Yeah, honestly, you get a few days of sunshine each year, and then that's it. Enjoy it while you can.
I fly 8 hours a day, once every 2 months.
Yeah, exactly. Quick, kids, get outside, enjoy it while you can.
I love it. All right, so you moved to Orlando. How old were you when that happened?
I was 14 going on 15.
All right. So you have friends, you know, 14, you have people you grew up with your whole life. You're coming to Orlando. What's it like starting over? What's that kind of
talking man?
About?
Well, so it was tough leaving some friends because on the street that I used to live on in the UK, we were a very tight knit. Like there was a lot of kids on the street that we used to play out on the street together, and it was a very tight bunch. So it was tough to leave that behind, but I was excited at the time to get out of there and move on to a better life. If you're from Bolton, you know that Bolton is not a very glamorous place. And I wasn't really enjoying myself there. I mean, the weather was a massive factor on it of it as well. So I was ready to get out of there. I came to the US, and my family put me into a public school here. which was very eye-opening to the standard of, well, I don't want to offend anybody, but the standard of education wasn't quite the same as what I was used to. Yeah. And trust me, I wasn't even in a good school in England, but they took me out of there and we found another schooling arrangement. I kind of went into a private school where there was a lot of other English kids there as well, which now I sound completely pretentious. So there we go. But
we did that. And, was it 5 minutes, 8 minutes?
Yeah, no. Let them talk themselves into trouble, man. I went to that private school and kind of there was a lot of English kids in that school, so it was easy to kind of adapt, and we all became a tight group of friends. I mean, I don't talk to any of them anymore, but
Yeah,
exactly. There you go. That's it.
What would you say the hardest part coming over from, aside from making new friends, culture-wise, other than our schools just being crap, apparently?
Yeah. First, I'd say so. I wouldn't say I struggled to, you know, find friends or anything, but you definitely the sense of humor here is a very different than it is in the UK. So, like the banter is a little bit different.
You gotta be a little softer on people over here.
You got a little bit softer. And like the way that I'm speaking now is very deliberate.
Yeah.
It's I've had to kind of change the way that I speak a little bit for people to understand me, because it got to the point where people were just, anytime I'd say something, I was just sick of repeating myself. So other than that, honestly though, I've not struggled at all, genuinely. Cool. Yeah. It's, I really do enjoy living here. I do. People ask me all the time, would I go back? Nah, I wouldn't. To visit, yeah, but not to live. I enjoy my life here.
Well, it's hard to leave sunshine and warm weather, you know?
Honestly. Yeah. I mean, today's not so sunny, but it's warm, you know, at least. It's nice. Plus the weather for flying is great most of the time up here.
Absolutely. And the last thing we'll talk about, kind of like your coming to the United States, is I used to watch a ton of YouTube, and for some reason they always pushed Europeans, especially people from the UK, eating American food for the first time, like candy, all that stuff. What was your impression on the food?
Oh man, it's awful. Yeah. It's so bad.
To be fair, UK food isn't the best food in the world either. All right,
we are not known for our cuisine. I think the main dish in the UK now is actually an Indian curry. So that tells you everything you need to know. I miss fish and chips, but I mean the candy and the sweets over here doesn't really compare. Like even now to this day, I will deliberately go and seek out English chocolate to you know, there's a shop near where I live that sells English chocolate imported straight from there. So that's my choice, you know.
I love it.
Jesus. First the schools, now the candy. Yeah. What else?
I'm tearing you apart, man. You had no idea what you're setting up for. Yeah. It's this is your own funeral, man. I'm sorry.
I know.
It was good while it lasted.
Yeah, exactly. Thanks a lot. All right. Thanks for having me.
How are we going? All right, we'll fast forward. We'll get rid of all that kind of stuff. We'll stop talking about that. But we'll talk about aviation. How old were you when you went into it? Because obviously you said this is what you wanted to do. It's kind of always been the back of your mind. Your grandpa helped influence you. You come here, new schools, another new school. Was it immediate? Was it, hey, go to an airport flight school? Was there kind of a waiting period for all that?
So it was 2008. I think, where I went and took a discovery flight at a flight school in Kissimmee, Florida.
Okay.
American Flyers was the name of it, actually. Yeah, that's who it was at the time.
Pretty big school.
Yeah. And obviously, you know, knowing what I know now about the way things work sometimes in aviation, I might have done things a little bit differently. But, you know, I did a discovery flight, obviously fell in love, you know, obviously it's what I wanted to do. So spoke with the family and we ended up scrambling a load of money together and sending me into flight school. So actually American Flyers then left that location and it turned into a place called Orlando Flight Training. And that's where I started. Got in there. It was a part 141 school that offered me a part 61 course, which, you know, anybody that's listened to me ramble on about my experiences there in the past knows that it wasn't the best experience. So during my time at that flight school, I was there from 2008 to 2009. I was given six different flight instructors at that school. Each kept leaving. One of them got fired. Each time that I had to get with a new instructor, it would always be like, okay, let's go up again and see what you can do and prove to me, you know, proficiency wise and stuff, which I kept doing and kept doing. And I ended up getting to a point where I was at, I think it was like 98, 97 hours or so, and had no PPL. And ended up stopping training, ran out of money. Like, we originally put $15,000 down on an account. And it was just swallowed up from the school taking it. And, you know, again, I always fast forward and look at how I look at things now and how I see things now. And I see everything so clearly now from all the experiences that I've had. But back then, when you're a student, you don't know any better. You're expecting the flight school to treat you well because they've got your money. You know, sometimes that just doesn't happen and didn't happen in my case. So I ended up stopping training and I left the with nothing. So it wasn't until 2012, I took a very long break. And in 2012, I happened to visit another flight school at Orlando Executive Airport and got straight back into it. At that flight school, I met and flew with the best flight instructor that I ever had. His name's Josh. He's captain at United now, I believe. So he's moved up in the world. He was the best instructor I had, and he took me through, got me done within a couple of months, and bing bang boom, I had my certificate, and I was laughing. It was good. That was a good experience at that school, honestly. It was very good. From there I took another break. Just wanted to kind of fly people around, because at this point, you know, on my YouTube channel, I've had a few comments about this subject and how, mummy and daddy paid for the certificate and all this. Like, all right, yeah, great, cool. But after all that money went, it was all myself paying for it. So I was paying as I was going. So the reason I was taking breaks was to recuperate a lot of money that I was spending and save up for instrument and beyond, you know. So I took a little break until 2015. In that time I was, you know, flying around here and there with friends and family and taking people up, you know, and then 2015 came and I decided to go for my instrument rating and did that out of a private strip with my instructor from the second flight school that I got my PPL at. And we were doing it privately out of a private airstrip north of Orlando. That was a really cool experience, and it was during that instrument training I decided that I wanted to start recording my flights. So started recording them just to kind of show, you know, how the training process was going for my instrument training. I tell you, I can't go back and watch those videos because they are so bad. Honest to God, man. They are so, so bad, from the music, to the camera angles. I had one GoPro and one Sony Handycam, which I don't know if you know what a Handycam is, but I would prop that up in the cockpit and it was just a terrible view. It's just awful, man. Awful. But we all start somewhere, right? We've all got to get a start. It kind of snowballed from there. So I went through my instrument rating, got that. I met my best friend who is called Otto, who was also going through his PPL training. And then he became my safety pilot a lot of the time as I was building hours for the instrument and also for the commercial as well. It started bad, it got better, and now it's about to go downhill again. So strap in, boys. So once I had my instrument rating, I wanted to go pretty quickly into commercial and then onto CFI because I wanted to go to an airline. That had been the dream since being a kid. I wanted to be an airline captain. I wanted to get there as quickly as I can. And as a lot of us know, being a flight instructor is a very good way of making that happen. Flying, getting the hours, and also making money while you're doing it. So I decided I wanted to get in there quickly. So I actually went back to a flight school in Kissimmee, which was being run by one of the instructors that got fired from the bad flight school that I originally went to. Should have been a warning sign. Should have been a warning sign. Yeah, exactly. Should have been, but it wasn't. Younger Lewis was a little bit naive, but I went in there and I got my commercial fairly quickly. And then the owner of the flight school kind of offered to give me a discounted rate on training because he needed a CFI to help him. So he wanted to push me through, which I'm absolutely thankful for. So he kind of pushed me through and I became a CFI in 2016 and started working immediately and immediately started to see some bad things on the part of this flight school, which I take with me to this day. And the way that I operate, I really do think is because of what I saw at this flight school and the other experiences that I've had from the first flight school. What I was seeing was basically the owner of the flight school was more caring about money rather than students, which in my experience in the flight schools that I've worked with, not all of them, but that seemed to have been the case. It's been more about the money than the students' progress. So there were some students there that I took on. One of them was at 60 hours without a solo. And, you know, I took him on. The owner said, hey, listen, see if you can get through to him and whatever. I took him on and within one flight, I'd soloed him. He was ready to go. I don't know what was holding the, well, I do know what was holding the owner back. He wanted more money, but there was a lot of stuff like that. And there's so many stories that I can get into, but to kind of cut that short, you'd see how it is. It came to a head where, you know, there was a lot of, it's so weird, man. Jealousy from this owner because I wanted to branch out and fly other aircraft. So there was other aircraft scattered around Orlando and I would kind of mention, hey, yeah, I'm going to fly this aircraft up at a different airport. He's like, oh no, you're flying with the enemy. Like, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, what are we doing?
Enemy, your flight school. Come on.
I don't know. What's going World on, War II? Yeah. Yeah, seriously. Like, it's crazy. So it was a lot of stuff. He was holding a lot of my students back. I'd have to send people to him to this owner for stage checks and stuff. And he would always send the student back saying something's wrong with them. They've got to do more training. And it was demoralizing for the students. It was demoralizing for me. And it just all came to a head where I was just like, I don't want this anymore. I kind of told him, listen, I will stay on with you until you can find another CFI. And that ended up being a couple of weeks. And then I got a nice text from him saying, yeah, your service is no longer required. So he tried to pull that one on me. But from then on, I went completely independent. At this point, you know, my YouTube channel, which I think I've forgotten to mention through all that, has become more about me training my students than my journey. So it's kind of transitioned from my journey to now my students' journeys. You know, showing different flight training scenarios and what we're doing from flight to flight, which was really cool to be able to kind of do. Because as a CFI, you can always review what the student's doing, but you can also review how you're instructing and how you can be a better instructor. And I really used it as a really helpful tool for that. So now with that, with the growing popularity, it wasn't a massive channel and still isn't a massive channel, but I was growing to the point where people were requesting training on a consistent basis. So I was able to make it as an independent. Yeah, exactly. Like I'm really thankful for it. I really am. And I kind of, like I said, took all those experiences and molded myself into, you know, a flight instructor that really cares about the students. Like it's not about me. It's not about them putting money in my pocket. Don't get me wrong. That's one of the main reasons you do it, to make money, but it's not about that. It's about the student and how they're progressing and stuff like that. So that's the way that I kind of operate today. And that's what my channel is today. You know, taking students. I mean,
the idea that you treat them right and in return, you're going to get money, you know?
Oh yeah, exactly.
Through, right?
Like exactly. You put them first, then the more you treat them right, the more you can charge them. You know, no, I'm just kidding.
That's the problem. They weren't charging enough.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. Come on. You've got to pay a premium. That's three things now. I'm done. So that's what it is now. It's honestly, I'm really pleased with the way that it's gone. And like I said, it's not the biggest channel in the world. You know, we don't get a ton of views like some of these other channels get, but the views that we do get are from people that get what I'm trying to do. You know, I try and make flight training fun and about the student and show a different side of aviation, a side that shows that you can have fun while maintaining standards and being safe. And you don't have to be this stuck up kind of, you know, strict military pilot to make it happen, you know? That's what it is today. So
when you were talking back about kind of your path, there's a lot of stretches of no flying.
Yeah.
What'd you do in those periods? One question is, what did you do to make money? And the second question is, what did you do to kind of keep the dream alive? Because, you know, when I was doing my training and I wasn't where I wanted to be, I always kind of thought like, it was never going to happen. So there's a lot of self-doubt that was going on in there. Yeah. Did you find that as well?
So in all honesty, with the experiences that I'd gone through, I did for a while lose sight of what I actually wanted to do. When I stopped training in 2009, my dad was always trying to push me, oh, you've got to go back, you've got to go back. And I just never found that love again until 2012. So that's the reason for that long stretch. I was just taking time to kind of figure out what I actually wanted to do. And then he had the threat of, okay, you got to go to college then if you're not going to go and do your flying. I was like, no, I'm not going to college. I'll go into flying. Yeah.
I'm not.
Exactly. No. I'll go back flying. I kind of started that back up again in 2012. And the other stretch was purely for money. It got to a point where I wasn't receiving any help for funding it anymore. So I had to fund it myself. So I actually ended up getting a job at Universal here in Orlando as a valet. So I was parking cars. And like everybody that I worked with knew that I was a pilot and whatever. And I would always talk, you know, the big talk as you do as a private pilot. Oh yeah, I'm a pilot. Yeah, I could take anyone flying, blah, blah, blah. But you know, I just didn't have the money to do the training. So I was doing that, saved up a lot of money decided to continue on. And when I did continue on, I wasn't going at it full time anymore. I was going at it maybe a couple of times a week at most. And then the rest of the time I was at home studying and making sure that my knowledge was where it needed to be and all of that. So yeah, those are the reasons. But when I became a CFI, it's been nonstop since then.
Yeah.
So,
all right, let's take a break from today's episode to hear from our sponsor, RAA. As a pilot, you rely on precision planning, trusted resources, and experience each day. And that's just what RAA brings to financial planning. You see, they're uniquely positioned to serve the airline community because RAA was created by pilots to serve pilots, which is why they've earned the trust of and served thousands in aviation industry for more than three decades. But more importantly, RAA's airline specialized advisors understand the unique set of needs, challenges, and goals associated with your career, including those factors that can affect your financial life and security. And that's why it's important to work with the right financial partner. Because whether you're just entering the airline industry or nearing your final flight, the team at RAA is here to support your journey from takeoff to touchdown. Learn more about the benefit of working with an RAA airline specialized advisor today at raa.com/pilot-to-pilot. That's raa.com/pilot-to-pilot. Now back to today's episode. So would you say CFI kind of fully regained your love for flying then, or was it a little bit before that?
It was before that. It was going through instrument training, you know, and then flying with my friend Otto. Like some of my best experiences in aviation have come flying with him, and it would just be stupid stuff like us flying, doing a cross country and splitting the time, you know, stopping off. Like he just sent me a message today because it's been 8 years since we went to Daytona and we rented a car. Picked up the crew car. And drove to the beach, just had a walk on the beach, nice romantic walk on the beach, me and my friend, you know?
Oh, man, too.
Like, it's just stupid little stuff like that that stays with me, you know? Which I think is so cool. It's been since then. Like, don't get me wrong, like, being a CFI is not easy for keeping the love for aviation, you know? Like,
yeah.
you get, I've gotten to a point where it burned me out a little bit. That was when I was at the flight school. When I became independent, I got a lot better with it because I was the one, you know, being my own boss and making my own decisions. It got better at that point, but definitely get some burnout as a CFI. I can tell you that.
Well, I think burnout's just normal in aviation in general. Even as an airline pilot, you get burnout. Yeah. As a corporate pilot, you get burnout. A lot of times, you know, you're kind of chasing the money, right? I've always been ingrained that you make the money while you can because you never know when it's going to stop. So it's always just go, 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 make the money. And then there comes a day where, you know, maybe you have some money or maybe you don't. I mean, sometimes there's not a lot of money there.
That's right.
But you get so down and you're just not necessarily depressed because you can't say depressed to the FAA. That's a bad thing.
You can't hold on to it.
You're just sad. And you're
bleep
just
that, like, bleep oh. that out.
Yeah. But you just have like not a great outlook on your prospects to continue this. And you think about, you know, you're like, well, my buddy's doing finance and he's doing pretty well. You know, they kind of like compare all that kind of stuff. But it's just hard, you know. I truly think that this is one of the best jobs that you can have, whether it's a CFI, whether it's an airline pilot, anything in aviation. I truly think it's hard to beat that. But you just have to make sure you manage it well and make sure you're taking time off for yourselves. And especially if you're an airline, if you have those flight benefits, go travel somewhere, go somewhere, go enjoy it. Remember when you're rushing through your training and whenever you had the rare opportunity, at least for me, it was rare to go have a fun flight. You know, that kind of is what you're here for, aviation. That brings the love back. You got to remember those flights and you got to even take those flights.
Absolutely. Absolutely agree. I mean, you know, you talked about chasing the money. So I'm a former airline pilot now, but when I first started, I've only ever worked for a small regional in Florida, but starting out there, I think I was making $38 an hour as a first officer when I started there. And that was 2019. Like that's not even that long ago, but just, you know, chasing the dream. And trying to keep the dream alive and you know, you do things for a lot less than you're worth to make the dream happen, you know?
Definitely. I mean, they always paint the picture. You're going to be age 65 at Delta flying a A350 to Tokyo and life's good. But we don't talk about making, especially back in the day when they were making minimum wage and less than that, sleeping on benches at airports.
Yep.
So 100%. There's a non-gambler side, glamorous side to this.
Like I'm complaining about $38 an hour that I've flown with people that were making a hell of a lot less when they started the flying and doing a lot more. So, you know, I can't really complain, but still.
So let's talk about that. So you're CFI, you're on your own. In the back of your mind, you wanted to do the airline route.
Yes.
What was it a matter of getting 1500 hours and applying wherever you wanted, or was it kind of take your time, pick the right fit for you?
It's the right fit. I've always been a guy that's wanted quality of life over anything else. You know, a lot of the people that I've been around in aviation that have, you know, been doing their hours and building their hours at the same time as me have always been like, oh, I've, you know, I've got dreams to go to a legacy or this and that. And it's never been like that for me. It's always been a case of wanting to have the life that I want to live rather than, you know, living being told what to do and where to go. And I think in all honesty, I was a little bit naive going into being an airline pilot, thinking that I would have the perfect life.
Like right away.
Yeah. I didn't know enough and I didn't educate myself enough to know what it takes to be an airline pilot and what goes into it. And don't get me wrong. Like, I consider myself barely an airline pilot because I was a very small regional airline in Florida. So barely an airline, but an airline nonetheless. You don't take it away from me. but yeah, I just didn't educate myself enough on scheduling, on how much I was going to be away from home, even at a small airline like that. And you know, I had the desire, and I always told myself, I told the people that watch my channel, you know, even though I'm going to an airline, I'll always keep my channel going. And I did for a while, but it all became too much. It just became too much to do everything. And eventually the everything outside the airline started to suffer. So I started that airline journey in 2019. I was type rated on the Saab 340 in February of that year and flew for a year on the Saab. And then I transitioned to the ATR, got typed on the ATR. And then when COVID started sprouting its ugly little head in 2020, ended up getting furloughed from that airline. But in that first year on the Saab, and it wasn't because of the Saab, it was just that the airline, like I didn't enjoy myself at all. Just really didn't enjoy myself, you know, from being away from home more than I wanted to be, not being able to control my own schedule anymore because I'd gone from being my own independent CFI doing whatever I wanted, when I wanted. If I wanted to fly on a day, I'd schedule a student. If I didn't, we didn't fly. Like, it was as simple as that. I take the days off that I need and fly with the students on the days that I want to. It wasn't that anymore. It was scheduling has you by the balls for 16 hours a day, basically. And you know, you do what you're told and there's no going against it really, unless it's against contract or against FAA rules, which they'll find a way. They'll find a way. So yeah, it was very naive of me to kind of go into it and think it was going to be this perfect thing. So I just really didn't enjoy it for the first year. Once I transitioned to the ATR, I started to enjoy it a lot more because I'd kind of given up the mindset that, okay, I'm going to have the perfect life. Like I gave it up and thought, this is what you want to do. This has been the dream. Follow the dream. And just as I was starting to enjoy it, furlough. So great. Wonderful. Which honestly, man, that hit me hard. That really did hit me hard. There was this overwhelming sense of I've had something snatched away from me. You know, I didn't make the decision to leave. The company had made the decision through necessity because, you know, they would go under otherwise. And it really hurt for a little while. I went straight from that back into instructing again, and again found the sense of purpose, making, you know, helping students get to where they need to be, and also making more and more videos, helping my online community now, my YouTube viewers, kind of helping them as well. And that really was really a good time, honestly, doing that. That's probably in that period where I was furloughed, that was probably my favorite time on YouTube.
There you go.
Yeah.
Silver lining.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Yep. Yeah. You know, every cloud. So yeah, kind of got into that. But there was always something during that period. And that period was probably about 18 months where I was doing that. Because I got recall letters. I got 3 recall letters. I turned them all down. I decided I was enjoying what I was doing too much to go back to the airline world. Mm. So I turned them down, left the company, lost my seniority, of course. Mm. So that's going to be important for the rest of this story. Yeah, was kind of just doing that. But while I was doing the instructing again and the YouTube, I was like, yeah, it's all great and stuff. But I have this dream since being young that I want to be a captain. I want to at least experience what it's like to captain an aircraft at an airline. And I decided that I needed to go back and do it. So I was actually going to go to one place and actually ended up going there for a couple of days and left. it wasn't the right fit. I had some conversations with a couple of people there and just decided it wasn't a right fit. So I left there and went back to the regional that I was with before. They, at this time, were going to allow me to make some content for my channel based around the airline, which is still up. So I've got some like ATR flights that they let me do, repositioning flights that's on my channel, which was a big draw for me, man. Big draw to be able to make some content like that and show people, give people an insight into how it is to fly an airliner, albeit a turboprop. But, you know, give people that insight, which was really cool. I was going back to a place that I knew, people that I knew, people that knew me, and yeah, kind of went back into it. Was a first officer again for a little while, and then upgraded. And I think it was about a month and a half after I upgraded, decided, nah, this ain't for me again. So,
so you got it though. You got the cat.
Exactly. That's my box. That's Did my it. Claim. Exactly. I checked the box and I got it done. Yeah, it's been a topsy turvy kind of journey, man. And it's been, you know, some people may look at it as like, oh, you know, he's wasting his time at the airlines and stuff. But I don't see it like that. I see it as me finding what I want to do and finding my place in the aviation world.
Yeah,
I fully believe that place is to help people to get into training, get through training, help them with my videos and all that sort of stuff. Like that it was really struggling for a long time. I was struggling to make the videos and do the stuff that I wanted to do while at the airline. So here we are, no longer an airline pilot.
How does that feel to say?
All right. So every pilot's got an ego, right? I'm not having it that we don't have egos. It's nice to put on a uniform and walk through an airport and have that sense of accomplishment. That feeling for me is now transitioned to my channel and my students and seeing people succeed, you know. It was getting to a point where I was cruising one day up to Nashville, and I was just sat there. The plane was all settled, you know, we just sat there kind of in silence. And I just thought, is this it? Is this what I'm offering the aviation community? Is this really what I want to do? Like I'm not furthering anything here. I'm not furthering myself. I'm not furthering, you know, my students and all that. So it's like, I was questioning constantly, like, is this really what I want to do? And it turns out it wasn't. So like I've transitioned now to that feeling of accomplishment is now helping my students, helping people online, receiving a ton of messages of people saying, oh, I watched this video and it helped me with landings, you know, little stuff like that. It really means a lot to me. And it's something that I didn't want to let die.
When, I guess I'll ask this way. Do you think if you would have gone to a different airline and had a different experience, do you think it would have been a whole different scenario and you'd possibly still be flying? Or let's say if your favorite flight instructor, somehow you got on with United, you know, you're kind of there. Do you think everything would be different?
It's a good question, man. And you're not the first to ask it. I think it's all time dependent. If I had started somewhere else and I'd built seniority and I was able to have a good quality of life now with where I am now and what I want to do now with my YouTube channel and my students and stuff, I think it would have made a difference. Yeah. But just for me to sit here now, and again, this might be naive, you know, people might look at this and think this guy's an idiot, but the way that I'm looking at it now is if I go somewhere else, I'm starting from the bottom. I'm going to have a terrible schedule. I'm going to be sat on reserve, not knowing if I'm going to get called or not. And it's going to detract from what I actually want to do. I just think the dream of being an airline pilot and being a captain is not the right dream. And I didn't know at the time that I was going to be able to do what I'm doing with being a CFI and YouTube and stuff. But I just think it was the wrong dream. I think the dream shifted now.
Well, yeah, dreams change, right? Yeah. I mean, it can change not to the rate it's changed for you. It could change from being a major airline pilot to only flying corporate. It could change within kind of still flying whatever you might think as being an airline captain or some kind of captain. But it could also change to going into sales. It could also change. I had an interview a long time ago. He went from being, he was a regional pilot, and now he's an air traffic controller. So wow. Dreams change,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So I always think that there's a place for you in this industry. You kind of ride your wave. And if you go off this way a little bit, you know, go that way. And if you want to come back, you can eventually come back.
Yeah.
You know, airlines are hiring eventually. If you ever want to come back, you can come bite the bullet.
Exactly, man.
Podcast just totally ruined your reputation.
I know. Whoops.
You know?
Yeah. Just started talking about chocolate and now... Come on, dude.
I'm sorry. Wrap it up. No, but dreams change. And I think it's important to understand that when you're young. And understand that this is a tough industry. It can be tough mentally. It can be tough physically draining. You just got to keep your head down and either focus on your dream or really understand that there's many opportunities that you can go down and you can have a good career, whether you're a flight instructor, whether you're an airline captain, whether you're flying a corporate jet around. You know, you can really have a good career and make it for what you want. If you want to be an airline captain, you got to embrace the suck for 5, 10, maybe now it might seem better, but who knows if that's going to last the whole time. So you just got to be prepared to put in the time and eventually you'll have a great life. But if you don't want to wait for that, then no one's going to judge you.
Yeah,
you.
Exactly. Everyone's different. This is not to say that being an airline pilot is the worst thing in the world, because it's not. You make a ton of money now. Like, people are throwing money at people. You know, it is a really good job, but you have to be willing to sacrifice quite a bit. I'm about to get married to my fiance, and
congrats,
thank you. The thought of having to be away from her doesn't sit well with me either. You know, and there's I know anywhere you go now, you're gonna have to be away for quite some time to do the airline stuff. So I mean. Yeah, never say never. I've had questions fairly recently of like, would you ever go back? And the answer is, I don't know. I don't know. You know, I'm no special one that can say that anybody will want me to go to their airline. But like, you know, I don't know the answer to that question at this moment. All I do know is that I'm really enjoying and I really have a huge desire to help the aviation community, and I'm trying everything that I can do to make that happen with my channel, with my students, and kind of spreading, like I said at the beginning, spread the good word of aviation, make it accessible.
I think it's important too, right? We need flight instructors that are excited. We need flight instructors that want to be flight instructors. As many of you know, your flight instructor, I don't know if it still happens now. It probably still does, but as soon as your flight instructor gets 1,000, 1,200, 1,500 hours, you know, they're out. So the student's just gone, moving on to someone else, which I can't blame them. They're following their dream. They want to do that. Like, by all means, they made it. They're doing it. They're making money, making better money, flying better equipment. By all means, go for it. But it's just an unfortunate side effect of how the industry is right now.
Yeah.
So we need flight instructors that want to be flight instructors, that are career flight instructors. And I think it's great. If this is what makes you happy, if this is what you want to do, then go for it. Spread the good word. Do what you need to do. And don't ever look back. But like we said, if you ever want the itch again, you know, you can go do it.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's there.
I appreciate that, man. I appreciate it. Yeah, the whole thing about, you know, a good CFI. I mean, I'm sure you've had the same. Like, we've all had somebody that's not been the best CFI for us. You know, we know how that feels. We know how it feels to lose a CFI to an airline. It's not a nice feeling. So having someone that's there at your side, I think, is really important. And that's what I'm trying to do.
Definitely. When talking about aviation YouTube, when you look at it as a community, as a whole, would you say it's in a good place? It's kind of shifted, right? Like, I feel like there's a lot more focus on training early on. Then it got more into kind of lifestyle ish. And then you have, you know, Trevor Jacob jumping out of an airplane, crashing it. And you have more clickbait stuff. But
that's why I shook my head as soon as you said it. Yeah. As soon as you said it, I shook my head.
Exactly. You knew it was coming. Yeah. But talk about just like where you think aviation YouTube is right now.
When I started my channel, I had no reason to believe that I would have any sort of success on YouTube. What I was seeing on there was people making videos about the training, like you said, a couple of people doing some corporate stuff. And it was just cool to see that insight. And I thought to myself, I want to get involved. I want to do it. And I want to do it in a way that I feel is the best. And I got into it. And as I got more and more into it, I started to open myself up to and find more aviation YouTube channels, some great, some not so great. And it opened my eyes to a side of YouTube aviation or aviation content creation, which I really, really don't like. And it's the side of operating recklessly or highlighting reckless operations solely to get views. And there's a lot of stuff around these days, like the Trevor Jacob thing, which I feel like are a major detriment to aviation. Like at the beginning of that video, he made some comment, or I think it was a text on screen or something, that said he wants people to learn from his experience as he's jumping out of a plane, you know, and crashing it into the side of a mountain. And as a flight instructor and somebody that wants to educate future pilots, knowing that somebody might see that and think, you know, that that's okay, that that's a normal thing, that all pilots go flying strapped with a parachute and a selfie stick, that didn't sit well with me. So when I see things like that, it really is discouraging. I don't like that. Like way back as well, I was seeing some things where there was some YouTubers putting stuff out consistently, consistent videos, one after the other, of this went wrong or this happened and blah, blah, blah. And it just, like, you know, I'm not saying that failures don't happen and bad things don't happen, but I've been flying since 2008 on and off, be it, but I've had maybe 3-4 bad things happen in that time, you know? It's just, it got to the point where I was seeing people are putting things out there to get views. And I don't think that works with aviation, man. I don't think it works. I really don't. I think it's a very dangerous game to be playing.
For sure.
To do that, you know?
And the bad part about it, so I agree with you. I think that it is kind of not in the best spot. I think part of that is YouTube itself, that has put the pressure on a lot of creators to force themselves to do shady stuff, if that makes sense. Like, obviously they're making the decision to do it, but the idea of going viral, the idea and the pressure of just trying to be, I mean, I don't know who the big YouTubers are now, but like Jake Paul, to be like Logan Paul, to be like the big ones, to be like KSI and the Sidemen. Like, it's just like they have to do something crazy, and they come up with these dumb ideas that they don't think about. They think about the current virality of that view of everyone watching it. I mean, maybe Trevor Jacobs, I don't know. That's a separate conversation. But sure, he thought he was, maybe he didn't think he was going to get in trouble, honestly. I don't know.
I don't know what was going through his head, but yeah. You're absolutely right though, man. There's the pressure that, you know, to get the algorithm to pick you up and you know, get you a load of views and make a load of money. It just doesn't work with aviation. It really doesn't. There was one video on TikTok where I saw a CFI made a video of, he put, some guy was doing some instrument training and he put a paper chart in the window and that was the guy's foggles. And it's just like, what would possess you to think that that's okay to put out on a public forum? First of all, as a CFI, you're supposed to be teaching things the right way. And secondly, how do you think you're not going to get in trouble for putting something like that up there? Like, what is going on? And it's all, you know, oh, look at me, you know, look at what we're doing. Like, I don't know. It's in a very weird place at the moment. There's a lot of good out there, but there's also a lot of bad, really. It's weird. It's a weird one.
Yeah. What's crazy to me is there's this one guy. I mean, I'll say his name. I don't know him.
Get him.
I think his YouTube is Air Jerry or Jerry Wagner. You've probably heard of him.
I've actually not. I don't know that one.
This dude in California who does some reckless stuff. Maybe he's changed. I don't know. Jerry, I've seen some of the videos. Everyone's seen some of the videos. There's been some wild stuff that's been going on. Maybe it's not anymore.
Right.
But what was crazy?
What kind of stuff?
Just shooting down toward the runway on an ILS and just like hammering it down, getting the airport at like 5 feet, landing on a.
Oh,
I think he did something near the Golden Gate Bridge, did something crazy over there. Like just a couple of interesting stuff.
GTA style. Okay. Yeah.
Ish. He's older. He has his own plane. He's probably a great pilot, but pushes the boundaries a little bit.
Yeah.
Maybe it's for YouTube. Maybe it's not. I don't know.
Right.
But it's, what's crazy is how you can get enabled by the community through the comments. Because a lot of people in the comments are like, oh my gosh, you're the best pilot. You landed when no one else could land. You did this, you did that. And the idea that that's implanting in their brain that that's okay. It's kind of what you're talking about before too. It's like some of these people think that this makes someone a good pilot.
Yeah.
Someone thinks that this is what I need to do to be a good pilot. And that's what's scary about it.
Yeah. 100%. I got asked a few weeks ago what I thought about Red Bull doing all that they do with the flying stuff, like landing on top of buildings and stuff like that. And while it's cool to see, I don't know. There's a part of me that just thinks, well, some of this stuff is really reckless. Like, I mean, yeah, you're trying to break a record or do whatever, but like some of it's really reckless and it reflects badly on aviation, I think, some of the time. I'm not trying to be a stick in the mud. I'm really not. But I just feel like there is a way to kind of present aviation, and sometimes it gets lost with stuff like you've just mentioned. Like it's odd. It's very odd. I can't imagine myself. Like, don't get me wrong, we've all done stuff wrong. We've all done something wrong at some point. Like, nobody's perfect.
On the internet, right?
Yeah, no, exactly. That's the difference.
Yeah,
man. Like, there was, I got reported to the FAA fairly recently. I posted a thing in one of my videos. Somebody was doing some formation flying, and I was at the back of the pack, and I wasn't part of the formation. I was just recording it from afar. And I ended up getting a call from the Orlando FISDO because somebody reported it to him that I was in a formation illegally, and had a nice little conversation with the FAA, who completely sided with me. And by the end of the conversation, they were saying, we've seen your channel, which scared me to no end. but the guy said, we really like what you're doing. Like you're helping the aviation community and all this. And I was really pleased with what he said, but it just goes to show, you put something out there. People are watching and you are running the risk of something happening, like certificate action. I don't know, whatever, suspensions. I don't know.
No, I mean, that's something you have to accept though. Like, you are willingly accepting that with every video you publish. You have to understand that this video could tear it all down,
yep.
Whether you meant it or not. Like, yep. If someone finds some kind of incident with that, or maybe their brother or they know someone at the FAA that has some power, like they could put some pressure on you,
exactly.
Whether you did something wrong or you did something right. Like, it doesn't really matter. It's up to someone else's opinion, yep. Essentially, how they interpret a rule versus how you interpret a rule.
Exactly.
So, it's up there. It's scary, yep. But you accept that.
Yeah, exactly. It's such a strenuous process to edit the videos, because I meticulously go through every single little part of that video to make sure that something is right, and something, even not even just the flying, even if the way that I explain something if I don't explain it exactly correctly, it might make you think that I'm saying something else, and I don't want that out there either. Like, that can be so confusing and misconstrued and stuff. So it's interesting. It's interesting to do, and yeah, you got to be really careful with it. You really do. But going back to some of these videos, people are not very careful. There was another video recently on a non-aviation channel. What are they called? I can't remember. They're like a prank channel. And they took a plane up with an instructor from a flight school, I think in California. And on the video, they're clearly doing a spin in a 172. And somebody was in the back of the plane, flying around the back of the plane in a spin, and obviously doing spins. I wouldn't advise having anything in the aft of an aeroplane doing a spin. But they did it anyway, and they put it up on the channel. And it just, I just thought to myself, how is a flight school allowing that to happen and being recorded, I don't know.
A lot of times I feel like they don't though, like they just go up, they rent the plane, they just film it and put it up and hope the school never sees it.
Maybe. But I mean, the flight instructor was there from the school, like he's putting his face out there to, I don't know.
What's crazy about that is it's not too hard to prove that you were not in the correct category. It's like, all right, we can try to figure out how much fuel you had. We can get an idea how much everyone weighed. We can do the math.
Exactly.
You were not legally allowed to spin that airplane.
Exactly, right? Exactly.
And that's gotten a lot of people killed.
Yep.
Like, that's not something that's just happened before.
100%, man.
Yeah, it gets people killed. Yeah. And good pilots too. They just make it a mistake.
I'm glad you said that as well, because it's not just about, finding people that are breaking rules and punish them. No. Fact of the matter is, you could die. Somebody could die. Like, it's crazy.
Yep. you've mentioned this, you've brought this up yourself, so I'm not calling it. So you've brought yourself up. You've said that you're not a big YouTuber. You said you're a small YouTuber. You kind of, well, I don't know if you said small, but you didn't really say that you weren't a big YouTuber. So When we're talking about growing a channel, when you're seeing these other aviation influencers, and I'll use that term lightly, but when you're talking about the other aviation personalities, how do you kind of maintain the respect of your channel and not kind of either one, do what they're doing. That's the stuff that you don't like that gets the views. There's great YouTube channels. I'm not saying anyone does this. This is just a general generalization of YouTube in general. How do you stay away from clickbait? How do you stay away from that? And how do you stay true to yourself and your channel?
So I think you just hit it with the last thing you said, staying true to yourself, being yourself. The biggest compliment that I've had from people that have, sent me an email, I want to come and do a flight with you. Let's make it happen, and I'll make it happen. And after the flight, they'll say, you're exactly the way that you are in your YouTube videos. You're exactly the same person. I think that goes a long way to building a relationship with your people. And honestly, putting stuff out there that's genuine, really. I operate a little bit differently than other people might operate. I inject a lot of fun into the flying that I do. I'll laugh with my students. I'll keep things really light. I'll explain things in a way, like I'll use bad language. And honestly, the amount of comments I've had about, is bad language really necessary? I'm keeping it real. It's who I am. Like, it's, I talk like that on a daily basis, like
the Manchester area.
Exactly. Should hear us back home. Being genuine and putting genuine content out there. I think that side of a pilot, you don't really see very often. When you think of a pilot, you think of a tie, epaulets, and very professional and stuff like that. In all honesty, I'm the furthest thing from that. And I don't know, that might have contributed to me growing a little bit slower than other people. But the fact of the matter is that I'm being myself, and I don't want to be anybody else in a video to gain views and stuff. It's not worth it to me. It wouldn't be fun at that point, But I mean, there's a ton of other channels out there that are fantastic that, I'm no professional video editor. All the video editing that I've done has all been learned by myself, just trial and error. Never done any classes or anything like that.
Never doing that again.
I know, Lewis. Yeah, it shows. But there's people out there that make beautiful aviation content.
Yeah, I do. And some talented people.
Yeah, 100%. And I think some of the time, visuals talk. People want to see beautiful views of, flying over the Grand Canyon or whatever. I think that plays into a little bit. I also think consistency. I'm doing at the moment, I'm trying to up it to 2 videos a week, but I'm doing like 1 video a week at the moment. I don't have my own airplane. I rent the aircraft that I fly. My students rent the aircraft as well. So whenever I want to go and fly on my own, I've got to shell out the money to rent the plane and stuff. And I think if I did have my own aircraft, I think I'd be able to take it a little bit further because I'd be able to do more, I want to do a little series of like a how-to series, how-to for PPL, instrument and commercial, how to do maneuvers. But every single time that I have to go out and do those flights, now it's going to have to be rented. So it's a lot of money,
And hope the plane's available.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly, man. Exactly. Yeah, I mean, there's a lot that goes into it, but I'm really, I say that, I'm not a big YouTuber. That's not a complaint by any means.
Yeah.
We've got just over 75,000 subscribers, which is dang, bro. Amazing. Come on, man. Amazing.
Yeah. Let me get some of those.
Yeah, no, let me send some of your way.
Where'd you buy those?
There you go. That's what it is. I keep getting those YouTube YouTube ads for buying it.
Yeah.
but yeah, we're not huge, but the people that follow me get what I'm trying to do, and that means a lot to me, rather than me being somebody else. And I don't know.
Yeah, no, I think it's important. I've made like one, let's say two or three YouTube videos. And I think it's, I mean, from my brief experience for making YouTube videos, while they were fun, I found it more of like camera comes on and I feel like I have to be something I'm not.
Yes.
And it's not, it's like a, it's not what I want to do. It's just happens. I put a camera on. I'm not used to being in front of a camera. Yeah. I'm just like, I don't, exactly. I'm just like, sorry. Yeah, it's just, it's interesting. Yeah. So staying true to yourself is a lot harder than I think people really understand that mm-hmm. it is. And not being someone that you think someone else wants you to be.
Yeah.
You know, so kudos to you for being able to do that.
I appreciate that, man. I appreciate it. You're absolutely right though. Like turning on a camera, it's like, and then it's for me at first, it was like, I'd freeze. It's like I forget everything that I say. Like even now, like when I'm doing a voiceover for a video, I'll write it out on the computer rather than kind of try and do it off the cuff. Cause the, I press record and it's like, cause I want to be myself. I want to be myself. Yeah. Yeah,
you should hear me do takes for ads or my intros and outros. That's the hardest part for me here. I'm like, yeah. Welcome to the- what do I say? The guy that edits this is probably like, Justin's an idiot.
Yeah, I know. You in the background. Come on, Justin.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not that hard.
Yeah. Get it together.
Yeah. Oh, it's so funny.
Yeah, man. Yeah. It's tough. It's
Last couple of things, we'll do a rapid fire section. But I want to ask what YouTubers are you watching? When do you watch aviation YouTube? I think that'd be interesting because a lot of people that make content don't watch aviation YouTube. So do you even consume the content that you're necessarily creating?
Not at all. Not at all. I don't have, yeah. The only person that I'm subscribed to is my friend Otto, who doesn't even make videos anymore. Yeah. I don't really watch aviation YouTube, to be honest with you. I get some stuff that comes up on like my the watch page on YouTube, and a lot of the times it's like people reviewing crashes and stuff like that, and that's got a place. Okay, that does have a place because we can learn from people's mistakes. But when I look at some of these thumbnails and some of the titles and stuff, I look at it and just think, well, you are trying to capitalize on somebody's mistake to get yourself some views. And it's funny because I fell into that trap once. I did fall into that trap once. The video is no longer on the channel. It was gone within 48 hours because I realized that, this ain't me. Somebody sent me a video to review of them having an engine failure and landing in a field. And I made the video and I wasn't pleased with kind of how I presented it and how, you know, it was. I just felt that I was capitalizing on somebody else's mistakes, and I took it down. So, you know, we all have the capacity to fall into the trap. But I mean, you know, if you're truthful with yourself, and think you can, I don't know. I think there's honor. You know?
Yeah, and checks and balances too, right? So if your fiance, I'm sure, can be like, "What are you doing?"
Yeah,
like,
exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah, so it's tough, and I feel like everyone kind of comes to the point where they realize that this isn't them, right? Everyone kind of has that realization that this is not what I want to do. This is not how I want to be portrayed. And yeah. Hopefully, I mean, this is kind of the dangerous part. Hopefully you have that realization before you get like the dopamine hit of the views, yes, of being like that.
Yeah.
Because once that hits, then it's like, oh, heck yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Lou's famous.
Yeah. He's famous in his own apartment. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, no, you're right.
So it's a dangerous world, YouTube, social media, and staying true to yourself. I kind of mentioned that before.
Yep.
But a lot of people want to do it. I mean, I think they've said that more people want to be YouTubers than NASA astronauts and doctors.
I just watched a video where somebody did a study on that, and like most of the kids these days, they want to be a YouTuber. Yeah.
Like, crazy.
It's really crazy.
So what kind of YouTube do you watch then? You watch, are you into UK YouTube?
So yeah, I do. I watch a lot of English, I mean, you'll know it as soccer, but we know it as football. A lot of football YouTubers. Yeah. Shut up, we don't talk about them. Yeah, well, you are right. Bolton Wanderers highlights. I'll watch. I don't know. There's nothing really specific. It's just a mishmash of stuff. Yeah. A lot of gaming stuff. I like watching a lot of gaming stuff. To be surprising, not really anything aviation related.
Johnny, so I got locked out of my account for a second. Should I get back in? Right. I'm not surprised by that, honestly. Yeah. It's I feel like that's, I don't listen to any podcast. I don't listen to aviation podcasts. Yeah. I don't listen to podcasts in general.
Right.
So I'm just kind of hoping it works. Yeah. And I honestly don't, this is might be, I don't listen to this. I will never listen to this podcast.
Won't listen to it back. Yeah,
I
have this
conversation. I just have blind trust that the person that edits this is not going to make me sound like an idiot or make you sound like an idiot.
Right.
But once it gets kind of passed through those checks and balances, it's posted, never goes to the ears ever again. I hate hearing the sound of my voice. I hate that I have a podcast. You know, it's just all that in general. So just,
yeah.
I can't do
You're
it.
You're absolutely right. Like, I can tell you now. I mean, we're living this podcast though, right? We're here in the moment. Exactly. Like we don't need to watch it back. Like I can tell you now, I won't be watching this back either. Like
just give me a shout out on the YouTube channel.
Exactly. I think I did this thing with this. He's a nice guy, I think.
Yeah. What's the name? I'm a pilot. So whatever. You're fine.
Yeah, you're fine. Yeah.
Small YouTuber. All right, man. I got some rapid fire questions for you. Then we'll wrap it up.
Cool.
Fairly simple. Nothing hard.
Okay.
Unless you make it hard.
Yeah. Yeah.
But
I tend to overthink these things.
Don't.
Yeah.
Say the first thing that comes to your mind. No explanation whatsoever. All right.
Yeah.
What's your favorite airplane ever made?
Boeing 747.
What about a corporate jet?
Oof. Oh God.
We'll skip it.
Yeah, skip small it. Piston. I don't really have one, to be honest with you.
What about a small piston?
Small piston, Piper Cherokee.
All right. Ugliest airplane you've ever seen?
One of the shorts.
Yeah, that's pretty bad.
Yeah. I don't know how they fly. There's one at Kissimmee Airport that's on its tail because it's tipped over. So,
yeah.
Weird.
Yeah, sorry. My kid was screaming so bad my wife had to go again.
Oh, God.
What's the hardest approach you've ever flown?
Oof, good one. Down to minimums, Pensacola. It was a very hefty crosswind. Can't remember the exact number, but it was pushing 30.
Oh, you can probably hear him.
He's like, come on, wrap it up.
Yeah. Sure, yeah, I probably actually might need to
go. No, you're good, man. You're good, man.
All right, we will... We'll do this later.
Yeah.
Right, I got to go.
Yeah, sounds good. Get out of here, man. Right. You've got more important stuff to do than talk to me.
Right. Yeah. Hey. Well, thank you, man. I appreciate it. We'll see you.
Yeah, brother. See ya.
And that's a wrap of today's episode. Thank you so much for listening. I really appreciate you taking the time. And as I say a couple times, you know, see your friend over there. If they have their phone out, you know, just put their face ID, type in their password, go to Spotify, iTunes. Make sure you download the podcast on their phone. Actually, probably don't do that because you might be breaking laws. But just tell them to go listen to Pilot the Pilot podcast because it's awesome. Aviation, hope you're having a good one. And as always, happy flying.
Pilot the Pilot LLC is compensated to make recommendations to his or her followers regarding the services of RAA or Allworth Airline Advisors, companies of Allworth Financial, LP, or Allworth. Promoter is not an employee or investment advisor representative of Allworth. Promoter is a current client of Allworth. Allworth-based promoter fee of $4,000 a month for sponsorship of the Pilot the Pilot podcast. Due to the compensation arrangement between Allworth and promoter, promoter has an incentive to recommend Allworth, resulting in material conflict of interest. Promoter's role on behalf of Allworth is limited strictly to making recommendations regarding the services of Allworth, introducing or referring prospective clients to Allworth. Promoter has no responsibility with respect to Allworth's investment advisor or other advisory services.